League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
This podcast is sponsored by IQBar. Your favorite clean, functional, delicious nutrition brand is raising the bar with a little help from Thomas Keller, Michelin star chef of the French Laundry. IQBar and Thomas Keller have teamed up to create a salted caramel chip protein bar and yuzu mango hydration mix. With toasted macadamia nuts, rich caramel flavor, and brain-boosting nutrients, this bar is like having a Michelin star meal in your pocket. Pair it with the taste bud tingling yuzu mango IQ mix hydration mix, packed with magnesium and adaptogens to improve clarity and mood. With Keller's culinary excellence and IQ Bar's commitment to great taste and clean ingredients, this limited edition collaboration is simply mwah. And the best part is that 10% of sales go directly to Chef Keller's nonprofit, Mentor, that supports aspiring young chefs. Great taste, great nutrition, great mission. Go to IQBar.com today and enter promo code KELLER20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products plus free shipping. That's IQBAR.com, promo code KELLER20.
The Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 845. It's the 11th of August 2017. On the podcast today, I have Graham Lumsden, CEO of Motif Bio, MTFB, and Graham talks about their recent milestone, which was the last patient completing the treatment in the Revive 2, the second phase 3 clinical trial of their lead drug Iclaprim. Also on the podcast, John Peters, Managing Director of Strategic Minerals, SML. And John goes over some of the highlights of his quarter 2 update, including record sales of magnetite at his Cobre operation. Plus, Jeremy Martin, CEO of Horizonte Minerals, HZM, goes over some of the highlights from the interim results, including having $5.6 million in cash, which means they are fully funded to complete their feasibility study and beyond. Also, I have financial analyst with Spreadex, Connor Campbell, talking about Admiral, Hikma Pharmaceuticals, and Kingfisher Group, all of who have their results out next week. And Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communications, talks about Andlast Energy and Power. He's a fan of that. Avation, that's AVAP, and Cineworld. I also have, as always, the top 5 most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. Plus, the top 5 most liked RNSs on the platform in the last 24 hours too.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Graham Lumsden, CEO of Motif Bio, that's MTFB ticker. Graham, thanks for joining me.
You're very welcome, Justin.
On the phone in San Fran, eh?
We're here, yes. We've been doing a number of investor meetings, so we're out in the West Coast this week.
Excellent stuff. Well, listen, you've released another sort of bit of news. It's a milestone in your journey here. We'll get to that in a bit. But before we do that, could you give a bit of background to the company for people not aware of your story, please, Graham?
Yes, Motif Bio is a dual-listed pharmaceutical biotechnology company focusing on the antibiotic space. We've been listed on the AIM exchange for a little over 2 years now. And as of November of last year, we're also listed on NASDAQ. And we have an exciting new antibiotic candidate, which is called Iclaprim. And Iclaprim is a very different mechanism to other antibiotics currently in development and on the market. And the important thing there is that we read almost on a daily basis about superbugs, which have developed resistance to existing antibiotics, including MRSA. And Iclaprim is very effective against some of these multi-drug resistant bacteria, including MRSA. So we think we have a pretty interesting story, and we think we're at the right place at the right time because the experts, the scientific experts and governments around the world are very concerned in providing incentives to motivate companies like Motif Bio to bring novel antibiotics to market.
Mm-hmm. And just to let people know where you are, you're in phase three, and there's two parts to this phase three. And if people are not aware of drug testing, phase three is the last phase before it sort of makes its journey to commerciality. And there's Revive 1, Revive 2. Can you explain a bit about these, please, Graham?
Yes. So Revive 1 and Revive 2 are our two identical phase three trials. And you're absolutely correct. Phase three is the final stage in the clinical development pathway. And we've talked to the FDA, the Food and Drug Administration in the United States, and we've talked to the European regulator, and they have asked us to do two well-controlled phase three trials to demonstrate the safety and efficacy of Eclipren. And provided we complete successfully those two well-controlled trials, that will be sufficient for us to submit applications to market Eclipren in the United States and in Europe. So those two well-controlled trials are called, in our case, Revive 1 and Revive 2. They are identical. It's just the case that the regulatory bodies wanted to see two well-controlled trials, and so we're doing two well-controlled trials. We announced the top-line results from Revive 1. They looked great from an efficacy and safety perspective. Those results were announced in April. And what we announced yesterday was the second trial, Revive 2, has now completed enrollment and treatment of patients. And so the trial itself is finished. We now have to wait to receive the top-line results from Covance, our clinical research organization. And that's expected to happen in the fourth quarter of this year. So we're a couple of 3 months away from seeing the top-line results, which we fully anticipate will be very similar to the top-line results that we announced for Revive 1 last April. So assuming we get top-line results in the fourth quarter, we're on track to be able to submit what's called a new drug application in the United States and a marketing authorization application in Europe in the first quarter of next year. And because Eclipren has been designated a qualified infectious disease product by the FDA, they have a six-month timeline instead of the usual 10-month timeline to review our file and give us a decision, hopefully, obviously, an approval. So that should come before the end of 2018. Mm-hmm. So we're a very late-stage company. We're getting very, very close to the finish line here.
Yeah, and I was looking back, actually, when I saw this, looking back at Revive 1 results, and it was you announced, I think, the end of the clinical trial finished on the 31st of January, and you had top-line results out April the 18th. So it's quite a quick turnaround, isn't it? It's just over 2 months there. They were February, March, yeah, two and a bit months. So that's if they work the same time frame, so not long away, is it, really?
It's not far away. We expect the timeline to be very similar in this second one. So, yeah, that 2 to 3 month timeline from now to top line results is probably a very good estimate. So, we're all set. There's a number of things happening between now and then that we'll be able to press release and inform the market. We have a number of other development programs ongoing. One of the other most recent announcements that we made several weeks ago is we have some really interesting data from an animal model that mimics what happens in patients with cystic fibrosis. Patients with cystic fibrosis have problems breathing because their lungs fill up with this sticky mucus material, which it makes it very difficult for them to breathe, and it makes them highly susceptible to bacterial pneumonia. And this animal model experiment that we completed shows that Eclipren works extremely well in bacterial pneumonia, where you have the equivalent of this sticky mucus. So the other exciting thing that we have, and there'll be more information about this in October, is a potential development program in an orphan disease known as cystic fibrosis. So you can see that we're continuing to expand the potential uses of Eclipren above and beyond the first indication in serious skin infections.
Okay, so if someone's listening now, sort of a potential investor, and they go, okay, I understand this, you're in clinical phase three, you're heading towards commerciality. So what? What does this mean? I mean, what's the potential here? What are you hoping to generate? I mean, is there a yardstick they can measure against? Because at the moment, like I said, you are a market cap of, what, 75 million pounds around about, or over here, of course, you're dual listed. So, you know, where, what's the potential upside here, Graham?
Yeah, so if we do it in US dollars, we're about a $100 million market cap mm-hmm. right now. And if you look at our peers, there's companies such as Paratek, Tetraphase, Nabreva. There's a number of other antibiotic companies listed on the NASDAQ exchange, and they have market caps kind of in the $300 to $600 million range. So we need to continue to get our story out in the United States, get the U.S. market to understand and recognize Motif Bio and Equiprim. That's why I'm here in San Francisco this week. And we are working the case so that we get better recognition and more investors in the United States. So I think in terms of share price and market cap, given the results that we've seen so far, we would expect to be able to close the gap on some of our comparable companies. This is an important market opportunity for us. If you look at some recent hospital antibiotics, Equiprim is for the hospital setting. You look at some recent antibiotics, an antibiotic called Zyvox, active ingredient linezolid, was manufactured by Pfizer, had peak year sales of $1.3 billion. Another company called Cubist had an antibiotic called Cubicin, the active ingredient daptomycin, that had peak year revenues of $1.4 billion. So we think we have an attractive potential market opportunity here, and there's a compelling need for novel antibiotics because more and more bacteria are developing resistance to the existing antibiotics. So we think we're in the right place at the right time here.
Mm-hmm. Excellent stuff. Well, Graham, if anyone's listening right now and they like the sound of this, but they're not yet following you on Vox Markets, give them three reasons why they should hit that follow button, please.
Yeah, so I think the first reason is this is an opportunity to participate in a company that's developing a novel antibiotic. If you listen to the chief medical officer in England, Dame Sally Davis, and indeed Margaret Chan, who's the director general of the World Health Organization, they're both quoted as being concerned that we could be 5 years away from a cut finger again being fatal, because a cut finger allows bacteria to enter under the skin, cause infections, and if the antibiotics are not working, that can become fatal. This is something that used to happen before the 1940s when the first antibiotics came onto the market, and we've kind of just take for granted antibiotics nowadays. So there's a real need to have novel antibiotics coming to the market, and if an investor is interested in participating, Motif Bio is listed on AIM, as well as NASDAQ, where we have a novel antibiotic called Equiprim, very well differentiated compared to others. Second reason, we're very late stage. We have top-line results from the first of two identical trials, and we just announced yesterday that we finished the second one, and so we're 2 to 3 months away from data readout for the second trial. So everything's on track to submit this new drug application and marketing authorization application early next year, and get a decision, obviously, hopefully an approval from the FDA before the end of 2018. That's pretty late stage, close to the finish line for most biotech investment opportunities. And I think the third reason is the more we study Equiprim, the more we're studying, we're more understanding how well differentiated it is. And the most recent piece of news gives us the potential opportunity to develop Equiprim for an orphan disease where patients with cystic fibrosis succumb to bacterial pneumonia. And so we think it's a pretty exciting investment opportunity for those three reasons.
Excellent. Graham, good to speak to you, and hopefully we'll chat again very soon. Thank you very much.
Very good. Thank you, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is John Peters, Managing Director of Strategic Minerals. That's SML ticker. John, thanks for joining me.
Good to speak to you again, Justin.
Yeah, you had some positive news out yesterday, an update, and we'll get to that in a bit, John. But as always, if there are people out there listening right now and new to investing or new to the podcast, they've not heard of you as a company, give them a brief summary as to what you're all about, please, John.
Yeah, look, we're pretty unique in that we're one of the few miners on AIM, or the minor or junior miners, if you like, that actually has a cash flow. So we're actually a diversified minerals company, and we're in all three phases of development. That is, we have an operation where we get cash flow, which keeps the lights on, means we don't have to go out to the market to raise money to pay for overheads. Mm-hmm. We've also got exploration. We've got a brownfield site where we're very patriotically drilling for tin in Cornwall. And we believe with a joint venture partner there, New Age Exploration, and we believe that that's going to be a long-term juggernaut for the company. And thirdly, we've then got straight greenfield sites where we're drilling in Western Australia. And there, we've got a range of minerals. We've had hits associated with cobalt, nickel, sulfide, some nickel laterite, nickel in laterite, and also we're looking for some gold and rare earths. So we're pretty spread out. As we know, we're using our cash flow basically to make sure that we then try and add value through exploration.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, yesterday's release was entitled Q2 Update and Record July Monthly Sales at Cobre. So let's start with Cobre there, John. Give us an update there, please, if you could.
Okay, yeah. Look, people were asking me about the quarterly report, and I held off a little bit because I wanted to be reflective of what was going on and to give the market, rather than just give the market completely historical information, I'm trying to give them some up-to-date as much as possible. Mm-hmm. And in that regard, Cobre has been moving along very well. We've got a new customer started that virtually is getting to double what we were doing before. They and our other largest customer had some troubles with their trucking companies. Now, we sell at mine gate, so we don't control the trucks. We only merely load them and move them out, etc. And some of the truck companies had some problems. That got rectified in July, so July boosted up. But I must also say that this isn't a one-off monthly thing. To my mind, it's quite possible that could last for quite a while. I should mention the our newest client, they actually started their contract in June. And I've got to say this, while they didn't take their material, and while I couldn't show that as a sale in June, they actually paid for all the material that they were supposed to have taken in that month. Mm-hmm. And I wish I had more customers like this. We give them an invoice. The next day we get a wire with their payment.
Yeah.
It's wonderful. We're talking hundreds of thousands of US dollars here.
Well, I bet most small businesses would like that, John. You know, a customer pays straight away. It's unheard of, isn't it?
Mate, I'd like it for my own pay as well.
Okay, so that's Cobre. So yeah, go on.
So, and just a couple of little things with Cobre. We're continuing to talk to the people there about extending the term on it, or formally extending the term on it. Rolls over every year, but while they're a big company, they're less likely to do that. They're actually have asked us to join with them in moving office to another part of the mine area, which will involve us some cost, but at the same time indicates that we're going to be there long term. And that's pretty good because the people there have done a really good job. We've, you know, increased the sales, but we haven't necessarily reduced the profit margin on this. And if anything, I think they're working on trying to improve that as we go forward.
Okay, excellent stuff. Okay, let's move to this country in Cornwall. Redmore, what's happening in there, the tin mine there?
Redmore, Cornwall, as you just said. There, we released a note just the other day, and it's really just backing up what we said, the fact that we've been doing the drilling, we're getting some interesting signs come through. We will have a report probably, you know, it's definitely this quarter, you know, probably hopefully not too far off. And with any luck, it'd be by the end of this month, but it might go into next month. And basically, the main reason for that is that we want to update them as to where we're going. This is not an overnight thing. This is a juggernaut, as I say. Mm-hmm. The beauty about this is it's likely to start producing cash flows for our company about a time when Cobre starts to either run out or get towards the end of its life. So we're actually looking at this as a long-term play. We're very confident on it. We believe a lot in the revival of the tin industry in Cornwall, and we've had some very good support from the locals there on it, and we will do everything to push it along. So we're quite happy with what's happening there.
Yeah, okay. Well, let's move over to your part of the world, to John and Kay and the rare earths. What's happening there?
Well, this is another good story for us. We're just moving into our – one of the beauties about Cobra and getting cash out of all of this is that we've been redirecting that cash to self-fund a lot of our drilling and our exploration. So here we go. We can manage to try and improve the underlying capital value to our shareholders without going out and diluting them. So it's a good story for us. With care, we're actually going back – doing some air core drilling. We're doing about 2,000 metres, so it's about 40 or 50 holes, not too deep. Mm-hmm. And all of that is designed at trying to define a bit more the cobalt resource that we've got there, and possibly the nickel in the laterite that's there as well. But then that's really a phase one to do with Hans Camp. Phase two is in identifying a bit better where the nickel sulfide might be, which is even better material for us to mine, and that will go on. And then on top of that, we've got prospects for both gold and some of the rare earths at Mount Weld, which we're going to follow on with. So what we've got, again, is a large upside on this stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And
One thing I should mention here too is in this quarter report, we've got a couple of things about, you know, all the directors' options have vested now, that we had price targets we had to hit. So we, as we said, we've gone from anywhere from, we raised last in October last year at 0.4 of a P, and our share price got as high as 3.6 or 3.7 mm-hmm. P. Now back to about the low twos. But basically, when that occurred, the board got together as well, and they looked at where the future for our company is. Mm-hmm. And we've set ourselves an internal target of getting this company, which is currently sitting about 27 million pound cap, to 100 mil within a 5-year time period. And we believe we can do that. We've already proven before that we can do stuff like this. And I reckon that's where we're going. In fact, what we've proven before is we normally can do it within that time frame. So there's our target, and that's what we're driving for. And as people know, Peter Whale, one of our directors, is our second largest shareholder. Mm-hmm. With the options that have vested for myself, I'm probably in there as well. So we've got significant skin in this game, and we're going to push it.
Yeah, well, looking at the chart, it's a classic there. It's a classic sort of rise, and now it consolidates for a while, and that consolidation is needed, you know, before a steady climb again. So it's a classic, chart shape that.
It's really looking for the next bit of major news about growth to move it on to the next level, I believe.
Yeah, exactly. And this is where opportunity lies for people who've done their research, always trying to avoid spikes and always trying to buy consolidation periods in a share price.
That's right.
Marvelous.
And I believe we're very much in a consolidation period at the moment.
Yeah. Okay, John, well, listen, if someone's listening, they like your diversified portfolio there, what you're doing, but they're not following you yet on Vox Markets, give them three reasons why they should hit that follow button, please.
Okay, cash flow. We've got it. We don't dilute shareholders unless we're adding something of value. The second thing is growth opportunities. We've got a portfolio of assets in materials that have got long-term good price prospects, and they've got all the upside of it. And the third one is, you put your finger on it, value. We're in a consolidation period, and the next period is up.
I was going to say point one is very important there, because you see a lot of companies, especially exploration companies, conducting placings, and that essentially is to keep the business going. It's not to create value for the company. You know, so you've got people that don't know the difference between why people place to get an acquisition or to generate value, or why to keep the lights on. Different things, you know.
And I think Monty Python said, "Oh, luxury." That's what we've got.
Yeah. Excellent, John. Good to speak to you. And like I said, you're very busy, so hopefully speak again very soon. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Justin. Bye, mate.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Jeremy Martin, CEO of Horizonte Minerals, HZM. Jeremy, thanks for joining me.
Justin, good morning. Good to speak to you again.
Yeah, you too. And you've got the interims out. We'll go through some of the highlights from that in a bit. But for someone who's just tuned in, they've never heard of Horizonte, can you explain to them in a summary what you're all about, please, Jeremy?
Yeah, so we are an AIM and TSX-listed development company. We've been active in Brazil for the last 8 years. We made a grassroots nickel discovery, which was the Araguaia project. We then consolidated that with an acquisition from Teck Resources, Canada's largest mining company. Last year, we acquired the northern deposit from Glencore. And as a result of the discovery, the consolidation, we now have one of the largest undeveloped tier one nickel saprolite projects globally. We financed in Q4 last year. We brought JP Morgan onto the share register alongside our existing institutions. And we are midway through a feasibility study that we will deliver later this year, early into Q1 next year. So that's the overall summary of the company.
Yeah, and I think it's worth pointing out, you know, a market cap of 30 million, but you've got a tier one asset here, and this could be truly transformational. And some of the figures you've reported, it's probably worth going over because it is amazing when and if this project gets ahead, and of course you've got no doubt it will do, but it really will be chucking off a good bit of cash, won't it?
Absolutely. I mean, if you look at the resource that we have, we've got a global resource of 130 million tons, which puts you up there amongst some of the biggest mines in operation with the likes of Anglo American or Vale today. We've got a very high grade starter area of the deposit, so we will have 10 years at around 2% nickel, and there's virtually no saprolite operations mining at that grade today anywhere globally. We're using a proven process route, so there's no risk associated with how you extract the nickel. And it's low capital intensity, and it will sit at the lower end of the cost curve and is economic at today's price range, which is the key. And if you take broadly today's nickel price, which I think yesterday it touched sort of late 10,800, 10,900, this project generates around $50 or $60 million of free cash flow a year.
Wow. And so that, and that is also larger than your market cap for 1 year. So that's cash flow. That's amazing. So where are you at the moment, Jeremy? Are your interims just come out? What highlights would you like to point out to in this?
I think the interims, I mean, the focus there is obviously our cash position, 5.6 million sterling. That allows us to deliver this feasibility and run into next year. So that's the main driver there. Obviously, the focus for the first half of the year has been starting the feasibility. And obviously, you can see the associated spend with that study. The front end work on the study, all of the on-the-ground data collection is now essentially complete. So we've gone from a very significant team on the ground back to our core team, which obviously means the costs come down on the ground. So yeah, I think the key highlight from those interims is really the robust cash position.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. And do you know what's interesting is that, like I said, nickel, you know, they had hit, I think, a six-month low in April. In fact, I'm reading your statement here, they have, yes. But Morgan Stanley and UBS have continued to highlight the base metal is preferred commodity for 2017. And I've just looked at a website here, and it's showing that nickel has been the best performer last month, still at multi-year lows, of course. But this tick up, I mean, I think it's gone up 16% in the last month. This tick up sometimes, you know, when I look at charts, and I look at charts very often, it often shows that this is some insight of what's to come. You know, you see a little bump off the bottom, and that proves that you're off the bottom. Once you start coming off, like copper of late, you know, once you start coming off the bottom, you realize people start wanting to get exposure to that commodity, you know, and I suppose things start to really rock and roll, don't they, when people understand that then nickel, we've seen the low, it's now consolidated, it'll probably start gaining here. And like you said, on a macro level, all the big guys are saying this is going to be in what supply deficit, do they, in the next couple of years?
Correct. I think looking at it from a high level, we've had 3 to 4 years where we have seen a continuous decline in the nickel price from the highs that we had sort of 6-7 years ago. And in parallel with that, you've had a large amount of metal inventory built up around the world. So for the last 2 years in particular, we've traded at anywhere between 12 to 14 year nickel price lows. And we've seen the price go down as low as 7,800 this year. When you look at the sort of historic pricing that nickel ran at for 10 to 15 years, it was around $17,000 to $18,000 a ton. So we really are right at that low end price range. And it was really a function that during the massive economic development in China, all of the major mining companies in the nickel space put new operations into production. They sort of came online towards the end of that front end drive in China, and obviously then spent the next 3 to 4 years putting a lot of metal out into the system, and obviously inventory built up. Now I think what we're seeing is this year we've seen the LME inventory is actually being drawn down. And we're seeing somewhere probably around 50,000 tons of inventory drawdown this year. And groups like UBS are saying that's going to increase to 100,000 tons of deficit next year. If you look at China, inbound nickel ore stocks, if you look from June last year through to June this year, in June last year they had around 13 million tons of ore in country, and that's reduced down to 8 million tons at the same time this year. So if you take the LME and inbound ore stocks in China, we've seen around 120,000 ton decrease in physical metal. And the other stat is that still at the nickel prices that we've seen over the last 6 to 8 months, around 50% of global operations are marginal at these prices. And only this week we've seen First Quantum saying they're going to put Ravensthorpe in Australia on care and maintenance. Also in the last month, Vale have come out and said that they're not going to spend any additional money on loss-making operations in New Caledonia. So we are finally seeing the supply side constraint required. We're seeing metal being drawn down, and also stainless steel, which is the main end use, is running at around 6 to 8% growth a year. So I think we are finally coming out of that that dark period for nickel. I can't tell you exactly what is going to be the driver seeing the price move forwards, or when that's going to be in the next 6 to 12 months, but definitely over the next 6 to 24, 36 months, I think we will see nickel perform as we have anticipated it will do, but it's just taken longer than planned. Then the other new entrant, which is effectively a game changer, is the electric vehicle revolution. Mm-hmm. And obviously there's lots of noise, the UK government saying by 2040 that they want to have electric vehicles being the predominant motive source around. And this week we saw BHP opening or committing funding to a new facility in Australia at Nickel West, purely to supply the nickel battery space, and obviously moving into Tesla's arena there. So I think after 5 to 8 years of no significant investment, no new projects, we're finally coming to a point where I think nickel is going to start to perform, and we're absolutely positioned to capitalize from that.
Exactly. And so tell us what's going to be happening there to Horizonte between now and the end of the year, Jeremy.
So we are around 55-60% progress with the feasibility study. All of the on-ground work is complete, the trial mining, the drilling. The basic engineering into detailed engineering has been completed on the plant. We're now in the process of going out for tenders on the capital cost equipment. So all of the big items, the kiln, the furnace, we're going out to get firm pricing on those items. There's also a lot of work going on looking at the design of the power line, the water line into the project, the overall site infrastructure, the roads. So that's all ongoing. We will also be filing all of the documentation for our installation license at the end of Q3, with the aim of having an installation license in Q1. The installation license allows construction. And then we will be working on all of the other work streams that flow into the feasibility study moving into Q3, Q4, the cash flow models, the capital costs, all of the detailed working around the plant. So a very active period for us moving into the second half of the year.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. Okay, well, if anyone's listening to this right now and they like the sound of this, Jeremy, but are not following you yet on Vox, given those three reasons in bullet form, why they should hit that follow button?
I think number one, we have a tier one project, probably the most advanced development asset in the nickel space out there in the marketplace today. So if you are looking to get exposure to nickel going forwards, we can deliver you a tier one project in terms of high grade, significant mine life and low end of the cost curve. Number two, as we talked about, I think now is a very good entry point into the nickel market. You're still sitting at multi-year lows, and I think there is significant upside over the next 6 to 36 months in the nickel space. And then finally, we are funded with the right team, with a very strong shareholder base to take this project through to production.
Marvellous stuff, Jeremy. Good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll chat again very soon. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Conor Campbell, financial analyst at Spreadex. You all right, Conor?
Very good, thank you.
Now, it's a Friday, and obviously we're looking at some of the biggest stocks, so almost some of them sort of well-known names in the FTSE 100 or 250 that are reporting next week. So starting off, who are you starting with, Conor?
Start off with Admiral Group. Mm-hmm. It's actually ended up having a fairly decent year, given that the first few months of the year were pretty rocky and there seemed to be some big issues for the company. Mm-hmm. It highlighted, I think the main issue was the changes to the Ogden rate, which is the discount rate used by UK courts to calculate personal injury damages awards. Mm-hmm. And the changes to that, I think Admiral Group were meant to report their full year figures at the end of February. They ended up having to push that back a week because they needed to, you know, recalculate their figures basically and let investors work out and let investors know what the impact was going to be. So obviously at the end of February, obviously investors didn't react very well to that. The stock fell. But even though its pre-tax profit went from what would have been a 3% increase before the Ogden rate change to a 25% fall, you know, it wiped out that change to the Ogden rate wiped out $105 million from its full-year pre-tax profit, which is, you know, that's not an insubstantial amount of money. The fact that it managed to maintain its dividend, I think total, including special dividends and that, I think it was £1.14 per share. The fact that it maintained that dividend reassured investors enormously and sort of has allowed it to put that Ogden rate shift behind it now, and as it's continued to climb really. Most recently in the last couple of weeks, I think even maybe the last week, there was an article in Forbes highlighting the stock as one to watch. It pointed out that the Association of British Insurers and revealed that UK motor insurance was, I think, a record high in the second quarter of 2017, mm-hmm. which obviously that bodes well for Admiral's figures next Thursday. I think its half-year figures are expected to more than double from just shy of 260 million to 553 million year-on-year. I think earnings are expected to be up around 2.4% as well. So from what could have been, you know, that Ogden rate shift could have been, you know, fake invest for other stocks this year to kick off a pretty substantial decline. It seems to have, you know, won investors back around pretty quickly and things are looking up for it. You know, it's doing very well as well. Like it's climbed significantly in the last couple of weeks. I guess that's the only danger really now, that it's got to deliver on those big figures just because of how quickly it has climbed, you know, from sort of the end of July to through to, you know, the first week and a half of August.
Yeah, well, do you know what? I was looking back at the chart there and looking back when it climbed to this level before, and it got to around about £21.40 at the moment, £21.39. But it got to £22.24, highest there have been exactly this time last year, which is obviously when their results were due to be reported. And and it dropped off, gapped down basically, the day after I think the results came out. It was a big gap there, I'm assuming it was, because it was the 17th of the 8th last year. So they obviously rose in expectation, then dropped on the fact, on the rumour, on the fact, I mean. And it'd be interesting to see if it does it again, because this time they haven't quite reached that high, but they've got a couple of days left, I suppose. But, it could be a case of just, you know, travelling on rumour, isn't it? And then, you know, buy the rumour, sell the fact, you know? So maybe it'll do that again. Who knows? What else you got there, Connor?
Then we've got Hikma Pharmaceuticals, which has had a pretty awful year. I think at the start of the year, things were going really well. In March, it hit a seven-month high. You know, off the back of its full-year figures. There was a 35% jump in sales, like to $2 billion. And then the main thing, it announced it was going to launch its own version of GlaxoSmithKline's Advair, you know, sort of generic version of the asthma drug. Obviously, the fact that Advair, you know, the patent's gone for GlaxoSmithKline has been a huge issue for that in the last couple of years. And obviously, pharmaceutical companies now all in competition to launch their own generic drug. You know, that really pushed Hikma higher in March. And then in May, it sort of all went wrong. Like in May, the FDA rejected their generic drug, said there was major issues with the application of the drug. A week later, it was its first quarter report. It was forced to cut its full-year revenue targets. I think originally it was expecting 2.2 billion. Now it's expected to be between 2.2 billion and 2.1 billion. Its generics drug business was expected to get a 15% increase from this generic asthma drug. But obviously now that's gone, so its full-year forecast for that division are down from $800 million to $670 million. You know, there just wasn't a lot of good news. And then a few weeks or months later, there was a note from Morgan Stanley stating that and this forecast, even though they had been reined in, they hadn't been reined in sufficiently. Obviously, you know, that took and lopped off another chunk of value from Hikma and left it trading at three and a half year lows. Like it's had really, considering it was at 7 month highs, it's had really, really awful, you know, 3 or 4 months. I guess I don't really know now what it can update on next Thursday. You know, even if I think sales are expected to be up like 8% to just over $950 million, which I guess leaves it on track to hit $2 billion. It seems that it always has a slightly more successful second half of the year. So that what does leave it on target to hit those revised, you know, its revised outlook, but without any major update on the asthma drug. The asthma drug is the key here. Without any update on that, and I don't think it looks likely that it will get approval this year at least, which is a significant blow to, you know, to its long-term plans. Mm-hmm. I'm not really sure where it goes. The only thing is, you know, it's at 3.5 year lows. There is plenty of room for it to climb a bit higher. It just really depends on how investors are going to be of having that asthma drug put on the back burner, I guess, until 2018.
Yeah, I was looking back at the chart again. February 2014, pretty much, is when it was at this level, £12.92. And it has reached highs of 27 quid. So it's over. Well, it's edging to, it has been oversold on the RSI, and it's edging towards that again of late, but it's one of those things. It's the opposite almost to Admiral, isn't it? Is all the bad news priced in? Is with Admiral, is all the good news priced in? You know, so we'll see. Well, and they may have opposite effects on the releases of their results there, because Admiral may drop, this may rise, because surely it's all priced in there. But you never know. You know, never know. It'd be interesting to see. What else are we looking at, Connor?
Kingfisher, you know, owns B&Q.
Yeah.
Kingfisher's got a really, really big French problem, basically. Both times in the run up to its, you know, it had a few issues at the start of the year. In the run up to its March full year figures, it started to see a pretty significant recovery. You know, investors were getting on board ahead of those full-year figures, and then, you know, the figures inevitably disappointed. Total group like-for-like sales were up 2.3%, and pre-tax profit was up just shy of 15% to 787 million. Very healthy figures. However, in France, like-for-like sales fell 2.7% compared to the 5.9% increase in the UK and Ireland. And that's a really significant, you know, divergence in performance there between the two regions. You know, I think the main issues, as you know, is Brico Dépôt and Castorama, I think, are the main brands in France. And it just has really, really struggled. It also, its outlook for its next financial year wasn't particularly positive. It pointed to uncertainty in the UK, you know, due to Brexit and things like that, and was cautious on France. At that point, it was cautious due to the French elections. Obviously, that was going to be a period of uncertainty in France, and they expected that to affect its performance. And geez, it certainly did affect its performance. Even though, again, you saw, like it did in March, in the run up to its first quarter release in May, it saw a really, really significant significant increase. You can see it surged to a 6 month high of like just shy of 370, basically like a couple of days before its first quarter figures. I think that was mainly due to a buy rating from HBC, and then you had the snap election announcement in mid-April, you know, really helped out a lot of UK stocks. And then once again, it sort of undermined investors' faith in the stock with its first quarter figures. Again, UK was strong. UK like-for-like, it's about 3.5%. And the main boost in the UK is Screwfix. I think B&Q it's going through some slight restructuring. Obviously, the whole company is going through into one Kingfisher plan, and B&Q seems to be bearing the brunt of that in the UK. But I think sales in Screwfix were up something like 20%. That's doing really, really well at the moment. Yeah. But then France was even worse than it was for the full year. I think like-for-like sales in France were down 5.5%. Yeah. Dragging overall sales down 0.6%. It's becoming a real issue for Kingfisher. There was also, you know, like I was mentioning, the one Kingfisher plan, there were issues. I think they said there was business disruption in the last few months based on that restructuring plan. I think the restructuring plan is meant to deliver, or it's intended, they've said that it will deliver 500 million extra in pre-tax profit from 2021 onwards. That's a lot of extra money by the restructuring plan. So I think investors will probably be willing to ride out short term disruption if they maintain that long term 500 million a year target. Obviously, if that starts to dip, then investors aren't going to be happy.
That's the trouble, though, is it's 2021. Our investment
is quite a way away.
I mean, the only thing that's going for it here is the share price is close to all time lows, which has bounced off before. But I mean, are people prepared to wait for 5 years or how many years is it? Or what is it? It's 4 years when there's other investments out there. You know, I don't know if they are. And also, it's a retail company. And, how fast can they grow?
It's French, you know, it's had all these French issues, and there's no guarantee in this upcoming sort of second quarter report next Thursday that the UK is going to be as strong as it was. You know, it's seen since it fell in the aftermath of that first quarter report in May, it's kept falling, and that's in part due to, you know, the wider retail sector in the UK. There's been so many issues, you know, especially in June and the start of July, they dominated the markets. You know, fears about falling retail sales and inflation and stagnant wages and things like that. So it's going to be interesting to see if that's also eroded the UK performance, which has been its main boost and its sort of lifesaver in the last few months. Then it's going to be interesting to see what it does, because like you're saying, it's fallen so low, there is room, like with Hikma, for it to grow, but I'm not sure if it's going to have even the slightest bit of good news in it to cause it to jump. There's also, you know, stuff like B&Q and Screwfix have both got new bosses, which B&Q hasn't been doing too well, so that's fine, but then Screwfix has been doing very well, and I guess there might be concerns that, you know, is that going to mess with whatever formula that they've got at that stock brand that's been doing so well in the last, you know, 6 or so months.
But as I said, you know, since in July last year, whenever it's hit these levels, it's almost rallied from this £3 up to 360, 370, 380. So it may rally, you never know. But again, it's got to maybe have the Hikma effect where all the bad news is out there and maybe a bit of green, you know, light at the end of the tunnel will give it a rally. Who knows? Marvellous stuff. Connor, thanks for that. Have a nice weekend.
Thanks very much.
And speak next week.
See you next week.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communications. You're on, Al.
I'm okay, thanks, Jess. Apart from the weather we've endured this week.
Well, I tell you what must have made your sunshine in your world, Alan and Glass Green, is the ADL release. And I had Dave Whitby on the podcast, and did about a billion shares traded that day, almost, you know? And the share price went up by, I don't know what it ended up by, it was up 60, 70% at one time. I know it pulled back a little bit there, but so I assume, Al, you've been a cover of this company even when there's no news. So when there's news out, you're bound to be covering it, aren't you, today?
It's on my list of companies to talk about today, as you'd expect. It's been quite a week, one way or another, but certainly for Andlass, it's been quite a momentous week, because the long vaunted and the long sort of expected agreement with the state energy companies has finally been solidified into a binding agreement to develop the Wellhead IPP power projects. And of course, just to remind people, Andalas Energy operates in Indonesia, and it's working with the state power companies, the state energy companies in Indonesia, to try to serve and resolve what is an ongoing energy crisis, simply due to the fact that you've got this burgeoning economy in Indonesia, 250 million people plus. There's huge demand. And quite simply, the existing infrastructure can't keep up. So Andlas have worked with the state energy companies to devise what they call wellhead power projects. That is where you have the gas wells dotted around the country. They are going to be placing these mobile power units to extract the gas, which will drive a turbine, which will generate power and resolve power in those particular regions. This has been discussed for the last couple of years. The project's been laid out, and finally now Andalus has taken the first major breakthrough step this week, and it's signed a binding agreement with PTPP Energy, which is part of the state energy company Pertamina, or Persera rather. It's as David Whitby, the CEO, said, it's a value trigger event for Andalus. It's going to generate project revenue in excess of 10 million per annum. And this is going to be for the next 20 years. And of course, this is the first of a number of projects that Andalus are going to be working on and developing. Now, of course, cynics might say out there, well, there's no detail about how the project's going to be paid for. There's no detail about financing or anything else. I'll take listeners back to last year when the company hired Dr. Robert Arnott, who is a project finance specialist for commercial energy projects like this. That's what Robert is working on now. And I would expect in the next little while, we're going to be hearing about the financing structure of the IPP projects, how they're going to be put together, how they're going to be developed and financed. This isn't going to happen tomorrow. This is obviously going to be taking place over the next 6 to 8 months. But the main thing is that the naysayers, the doommongers and naysayers out there that have been condemning Andalus as a business now have to be humbled by it, because the company has done what it says. It has actually got this deal on the table. It's got a binding agreement, and this is the first of many. And it's got a very exciting future. And the really, you know, valued at 3 million where it is now, it's going to be, with each IPP project generating in excess of $10 million a year. I would say that if investors look at this and do the math, the company is certainly due a re-rating, probably, as the broker Cantor has said, up to half a P, you know, which is well ahead of where we are now.
Yeah, I mean, in my mind, listen, we've always said there's potential here, in Indonesia, but there's still a couple of stumbling blocks. Like I said, there's still that, you know, hopefully the funding to get out the way, because we know they need some funding somewhere, just for, operational funding, not just for project funding. But yeah, it's, you know, if they get over these hurdles, then they'll certainly, re-rate. But it's just those hurdles at the moment. There's still risk, obviously, there, but with that risk comes a lot of reward if they get that, you know.
That's right. I mean, the big thing is that, of course, as I said just now, the doommongers and naysayers out there have been saying, oh, it's worthless, it's this, that, the other. Well, you know, clearly, David Whitby and the team have been grafting away. They've got it's a very experienced team. They've got a lot of local sort of people from Indonesia there working with Andalus, and they've now got this first significant hurdle overcome. And it's now a viable business. You've got the first of many projects lined up. Yes, obviously, funding for the company, project funding is an issue, but that's why they brought Robert Arnott in to do that. And of course, now we've got over this particular hurdle. I would expect we're going to hear in the coming weeks and months detail about funding for the company, detail about funding for the projects, and how the company goes forward from here. But that's what people need to focus on now. And obviously, yes, there is still risk with the stock, but that risk has been massively reduced. Now we've got over the first hurdle of actually getting an agreement in place.
I like the way you phrased local people there. It reminded me of the League of Gentlemen. Local people for local shop for local people. No, it's only local shop for local people. We don't serve anyone else.
It's locals.
All right. Yes. Cool. What else are you looking at, Al?
Okay. My colleague, Dr. David Paul at VectorVest, flagged up this company last year, and indeed again this week. It's an aircraft leasing company based in Singapore called Avation. The epic code is AVAP, mm-hmm. currently worth 153 million quid. The stock's been as high as £2.50, as low as £1.34 on the year. It's currently sort of pushing the year highs again. But this company was flagged up last year when the stock was trading below £2. VectorVest then flagged a price target of 226p, which it's now trading at 246p, so it's hit and surpassed that. This is just a company that's delivering steady growth. It's got a fleet of aircraft which is leases to airlines such as Flybe, Virgin Australia, Thomas Cook, Condor, Air France, Air Berlin, Air India, Mandarin Airlines, and it's also got a parts business, so it supplies those parts to the airlines to whom it leases the aircraft. Most recent update from the company, a trading update on at the end of June, said it was trading in line with expectations. $94 million revenues expected for the year, and it says leasing revenues have grown approximately 32% year on year. It's also paying a dividend, so there's a small dividend yield of six cents paid on the year, which is an increase of 85% over last year. And the company said it's diversifying its aircraft fleet and is in pursuit of growth. And indeed, this was recognised by the VectorVest and the. There are a number of metrics on the VectorVest system. The relative timing trigger that raises the stock at very highly, and also the master indicator on VectorVest for every logs a rating of 1.22, which is very good on a scale of 0 to 2 in the way the VectorVest works. But the system has also flagged up a chart, and if you look at the chart for AVAP, it looks very strong indeed. The current price target is £2.80, but the charting indicators that Dr. David Paul has published on the website indicates charting potential to take the stock to over £3. So either way, if you look at the chart, you've got a solid growth company here, which is just steadily growing, steadily expanding. It's now paying a dividend, and right now it looks as though the only way is up.
Mm-hmm. Like one of its planes. Okay, AVAP is ticker there. All right, anything else you're looking at, Al?
Yes, indeed. On Thursday, we had Cineworld reporting its half year numbers. Now, Cineworld, of course, is as the name would suggest, it's an operator of many, many cinemas. It's got something like 220 cinemas around the world with over 2,000 screens. And again, the chart on this stock, we've just seen steady growth over the past year, and going to the cinema is really back in vogue now. You know, it got to a stage, I think, probably sort of 10, 15 years ago, where cinemas were dirty, scruffy places, and you go in and you know, it wasn't the most enjoyable experience. But that's all changed. I think a lot of the cinemas now are really sort of making every effort to make it a great night out or a great afternoon out for family and likewise. And certainly Cineworld is at the forefront of that, and that's, I think, been reflected in the success the company's enjoyed over the past year. It's got a valuation of nearly $2 billion now, so it's highly rated. But that's because it's delivering numbers at or ahead of expectations. On Thursday, it said half-year revenue growth of nearly 18%, adjusted profits up 23% to 42 million. And it said, you know, the visibility looking forward is very good. It's got a number of releases. I mean, obviously, we spoke last week about Dunkirk. That was a big success for Cineworld over the summer. It's got films such as Thor, Kingsman, Star Wars. This is all coming up during the second half of the year. So based on those big films that everyone wants to go and see, it expects good revenues going forward, and it remains confident of delivering results in line with the full year. Interesting, the stock's currently, as I'm talking, is trading at £7.20. You've got it recently broke back through the 50-day moving average, which is at 695p. So I would say, provided we can hold above that for the next few weeks, I would expect in the run-up to Christmas we're going to easily revisit year highs of £7.40, possibly even higher still.
Yeah, I'd caution on that 740 because that looks like a major bit of resistance. So it's almost like saying 729 now. So, you know, because you often see a classic charting pattern, a double top. And, you know, if it does get above 715 and closes above that level, then you're probably safe it's going to go higher. But
yeah,
I
think end of week close probably. I mean, obviously, sometimes sort of midweek you'll see a pop up above that. But you know, if you see an end of week close above that, that's normally pretty emphatic. You know, if the stock's trading and it closes out Friday at that level, then, you know, we can expect a whole new world the following week.
Whole new world. All right. marvellous. Al, thanks for that, fella. And have a nice weekend. Speak next week.
Thanks, Joss. You too. All the best.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They were at 5, Angus Energy, ANGS. At 4, Ascent Resources, AST. At 3, Prospects Oil and Gas, PXOG. At 2, Vitesse Media. Do you know what? They're up by, what is it? Tiny market, microcap. Well, in fact, they've shot up. They're up 80%. As I'm reading this right now, because they had cash, the update wasn't too bad. Revenue of 2 odd million when it was bigger than their market cap. I've had hardly any news out of late until this, and it shot up by 80%. And so that's why people like that, or followed it, I should say. That's VIS, Vitesse Media. And number one, most followed company on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours has been UK Oil and Gas, UKOG. All right, top five most liked RNSs on the platform last 24 hours. They are Codal Minerals, COD, with a K, Diamond Core Assay Results, Lithium Project Mali. At 4, Zenith Energy, ZEN, production increase at well M66 in Azerbaijan. At 3, Echo Energy, Holdings and Company. At 2, Canadian Overseas Petroleum, COPL. Reports Q2 2017 results. And number one most liked RNS on the platform in the last 24 hours. And very rarely will you get a liked RNS from issue of equity. And that's what it is. Asia Met Resources, of course, they are us. They've issued equity. They've raised £6 million. And they've brought onto the shareholder register JP Morgan Asset Management, one of the biggest asset managers in the world. And I think last time I looked, $1.7 trillion under management. So, big company coming aboard there. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
The Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Every business has an ambition. PayPal Open is the platform designed to help you grow into yours. With business loans so you can expand and access to hundreds of millions of PayPal customers worldwide. And your customers can pay all the ways they want. With PayPal, Venmo, Pay Later, and all major cards. So you can focus on scaling up. When it's time to get growing, there's one platform for all business. PayPal Open. Grow today at paypalopen.com. Loans subject to approval in available locations.
This podcast is sponsored by IQBar. Your favorite clean, functional, delicious nutrition brand is raising the bar with a little help from Thomas Keller, Michelin star chef of the French Laundry. IQ Bar and Thomas Keller have teamed up to create a salted caramel chip protein bar and Yuzu mango hydration mix. With toasted macadamia nuts, rich caramel flavor, and brain-boosting nutrients, this bar is like having a Michelin star meal in your pocket. Pair it with the taste bud tingling Yuzu Mango IQ Mix Hydration Mix, packed with magnesium and adaptogens to improve clarity and mood. With Keller's culinary excellence and IQ Bar's commitment to great taste and clean ingredients, this limited edition collaboration is simply mwah. And the best part is that 10% of sales go directly to Chef Keller's nonprofit, Mentor, that supports aspiring young chefs. Great taste, great nutrition, great mission. Go to iqbar.com today and enter promo code KELLER20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products plus free shipping. That's iqbar.com, promo code KELLER20.